Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Frog Watch with your one and only host who is the most... Frog Squatch.
That opener was Guylian with one of their recent singles, Letters from the Skipper. And don't forget that we're running a contest right now where you can enter to win one of three digital downloads of the entire Guylian catalog, including recent singles and their remixed and remastered first album entitled Admit One. All you have to do is like my Facebook page, that's Prog-Watch, or follow me on Twitter, at ProgSquatch, all one word, ProgSquatch, and send the word contest. Or if you prefer, you can email me that word at ProgSquatch@gmail.com. I'll run this contest for another week or so before compiling all the names and selecting three lucky winners. Guylian has a nice sound and would make an excellent addition to any serious prog collection. So why not enter to win? It's easy and free. Now on to the main feature of this week's show, which centers on Australian cinematic prog rocker Ben Craven. Ben and I had a nice conversation a few weeks back, and I'll be taking a few breaks throughout the proceedings to play some of his music. Now on to part one of the interview.
Good morning.
Hello, Ben. Yeah, it's my morning, not yours.
Hi, Anthony. How are you going?
I'm going good. Please call me Tony.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Tony or Anthony? Tony, got it.
All right. Yeah, it's almost bedtime for you, and I just rolled out of bed over here. So, yeah, I guess we'll get going, huh?
Yeah, no worries at all.
Okay, so if the listeners can't guess, you are Australian. And, yeah, you play...
It's either Australian or New Zealand with this accent, I suppose.
Is that right?
Australian, yes, definitely.
Okay. So you play guitar, keyboards, bass, drums, you know, all the traditional rock instruments. You want to talk a little bit about your background and some of your influences?
Yeah, well, look, as far as background goes, I was probably about six when I picked up a violin. I learned violin for a number of years, and I was really terrible at it. And at some point after then, I decided... I'll stop this. I'm not going to have music lessons again. And it was a lot longer before I bought a guitar. Bought the cheapest Stratocaster copy I could find. And just went from there. But, I mean, a lot of that time, as a kid, I was listening to Pink Floyd, you know, for most of that time. Mm-hmm. And Mike Oldfield. And even earlier on, it was... a lot of Mark Knopfler and Dire Straits, you know, kind of a lot of tennis racket pretending to play the guitar for a number of years. But no, eventually you just start to pick it up. I mean, a guitar was a fantastic thing to pick up because, you know, I hated my sound on the violin, but the guitar had frets. So suddenly your fingers would go in the right place and you would be perfectly in tune. So this was, you know, this was a revelation.
Right. I bought a fretless bass about a year ago. I do a little of this on the side, a little recording of my own stuff. And, yeah, it's hard to play. You have to play to the line. You know, on a guitar, you have those wires. You just get in between them and you're good, you know.
But, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, but on, like, cello, you know, violin, fretless bass, you got to be right on that line, you know, right where you got to be.
I bought a fretless bass as well fairly recently, except the one I got hasn't got any lines on it anywhere, so.
Mine has lines at least, yeah.
I had to get some of that sticky white tape and put the lines on it.
Yeah. So, any Australian bands? No influence there from any of those? I don't know.
Australia's more of a around that time. I think it was more the Australian pub rock scene that was big.
Like Men at Work kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was all early kind of Men at Work, In Excess, Midnight Oil, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't say so much that was an influence as much as a constant soundtrack on the radio. So it'd probably seep in there. But no, I don't think I really took too much away from that.
Okay.
The biggest... I suppose the biggest revelations to me, A was Pink Floyd, and B was Yes. When I finally got hold of, I mean, I'd heard Owner of a Lonely Heart on the radio all the time, and I thought, yeah, it was a great 80s song. But when I delved backwards into the catalogue of Yes, it was, you know, like the clouds parting in the sky, and you know, it was Heart of the Sunrise, and then the first time I heard Close to the Edge, I was scared to death, really.
What, scared? Why?
I was scared of the frenetic opening, the sound of Rick's keys. It just sounded completely schizophrenic and all over the place. And it was such a wonderful feeling to be just totally confused. You know, the very first time it hit you.
Yeah.
First time it hit me, it was great.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite Yes album.
Yeah. You know, for someone who hadn't had much exposure to real progressive rock, that was extraordinary.
Revelation.
Absolutely.
So on your, I guess, your first proper release, you used the name Tunisia?
Yes, I did.
On Two False Idols. You want to talk at all about that period and what was going on? You played all the instruments on it, right?
Yeah, I played everything. I think there's one track which has got some hand claps from what would have been the rest of the band. I said, well, you know, it hasn't quite worked out as a band record, but hey, come on, guys, let's all clap hands on this. So, you know, we all appeared on one track. No, it's that particular album, that sort of started out as a band idea. You know, I just started getting a recording studio together myself. And so I was trying to keep these songs relatively simple. I mean, they're mainly guitar-based songs, a lot of acoustic guitar songs, a bit of electric in there, but they're relatively simple folk rock kind of songs. And that was kind of fun to do with the band, but I think there were kind of two songs there that started off as a band project, and after that it just I kind of ran away with it instead. I still liked the idea of hiding behind a band name, which is why I picked a name, Tunisia, at the time. But that just got really confusing when I was trying to explain to people what it was. And, you know, the album sort of came out and was trying to promote it, and it was just very confusing, well, what it was. But a lot of the music I still quite like, and a lot of those songs have developed a lot, you know, added more prog touches now when I play them.
Yeah. So, yeah, I see you took it back now. It's in your Bandcamp catalog there under your name, the same cover. But
yeah. I own the masters. I can do all that stuff.
It's, oh, yeah, yeah. I just thought it was interesting how you named it, you called it Tunisia at first, then you kind of took it back later. I was just wondering what was going on there.
Yeah, well, I took it back after the next album, Great and Terrible Potions, came out, and that got a lot more recognition.
Yeah, it's a great piece of work. I was going to talk about that next, yeah.
So after that, I thought, oh, I've got this other piece, and really it was just my album pretty much. So I decided to remix it as well, putting on it what I'd learnt from the previous album. And so, yeah, as you said, it's up there on Bandcamp now as well.
At this point, I figured I'd take a break from the talk and play a tune called Golden Band, Part 1, from Ben's first album entitled Two False Idols from 2005.
Thank you. mystified air of silence, lasting too long.
Once again, that was Golden Band, Part 1, from Two False Idols by Ben Craven, his first release in 2005. And now more of that interview. So, yeah, you mentioned your next proper release, Great and Terrible Potions. Yeah, I think it's a great piece of work. I think that's the first one I heard from you that got me into you a few years back. And it also has Roger...
No one heard the previous one, sorry.
But, yeah, it even has a Roger Dean cover, huh? So you want to talk a little bit about the making of this album, and how'd you end up with the Roger Dean cover?
Well, the album itself, most of that music on that album was written about 20 years ago now.
Wow.
So most of that music, just about all of it, predates everything I did on that Two False Idols album. But the reason I didn't go ahead with it was... it was more complicated music. It was harder for me to finish it off with the studio facilities I had. They weren't, advanced enough to be able to handle the kind of arrangements I was trying to put together. So I kind of put all that music to one side, did this easier, fun album, and then, right, okay, now I can get back to working on these songs. So working on that music, it came together to be the Great and Terrible Potions album, and I was looking around for release options, looking at kind of local independent labels and things. None of that actually happened, but one of the people I was speaking to had a semi kind of personal relationship with Roger Dean, and he said, "You know what this is?" I said, "I have no idea." He said, "This is progressive rock." I said, "Well, is it?" He said, yeah, and you know what would be fantastic? I said, what? He said, you should get a Roger Dean cover for it. No, you know, they kind of laughed. Yeah, sure, that'd be great. Next, you know, move on. He says, no, really, I know him and I can have a chat with him about it. I mean, it's a pretty boring story, really, but it was basically a mutual friend. But it did take, you know, at least another 6 months of chasing it down and making it happen.
Well, that's really cool.
But, I mean, working with Roger Dean was absolutely incredible and absolutely unexpected, I have to say.
So what was it like? Did you have any concept that you went to him with, or was it more or less just, you know, he made a few sketches and you picked one? Or, I mean, what's that like, you know, getting Roger Dean, you know, to do a cover for you?
I think with Roger, you know, even if you get what you're given, it is out of this world.
Right. It's a cool cover, you know.
That's a pre-existing image, actually, that one. I think that dates from around the Yes Union cover.
Yeah, it has that look to it, but it also looks kind of Australian in a way or something. You know, you guys have that big mountain with the flat top out there and a lot of scrub. Yeah. You know, yeah.
No, that's and I think that was so that particular image hadn't been used on an album yet. So there were a couple of options floating around, but that I just absolutely loved that image.
Yeah, it's cool.
I know they're actually, you know, kind of branches or rock branch formations coming out of this mountain like structure, but it also like smoke to me from a distance, and I thought, you know, this sounds some guys cooking up bloody potions in a mountain somewhere, and you know, the smoke billowing out. You know, I saw what I wanted to see.
Yeah, great and terrible potions.
Yeah, and I loved it, and I still do. Extraordinary to be able to work with Roger Dean, really.
Yeah, cool. This seemed like a good place to pause and play one from Ben's album Great and Terrible Potions from 2011. The name of this one is No Specific Harm. We'll be right back. Once again, that was No Specific Harm by Ben Craven from his 2011 album, which sports a Roger Dean cover, entitled Great and Terrible Potions. Back to the interview. Your first two albums had a fuller sound, you know, more complex arrangements you were talking about, but you stripped it down for the next album, which was more or less like a three-piece, right, with Dissected. It was just you, a bassist, yeah, and a drummer.
I mean, I wouldn't class that as a proper album. It was more of a kind of documenting the arrangements that we came up with. But yeah, I mean, after Great and Terrible Potions was out, it was, well, really, I've got to have a go at performing this live.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what other avenues do you have for promotion, especially
these days?
Yeah. Especially out in Australia, where there is actually there's not really a big audience for progressive rock anyway out here. So, you know, there's a couple of guys I knew, and we'd played before, and we were just kind of messing around with the songs, and it felt right to try to put it in a three piece setup and try to rock it up a bit, try to fool people that it wasn't progressive rock, you know. We figured out a way to play a lot of these songs and change them around a bit. Did a few gigs and did a couple of online things and made a few videos and around that time it was okay. Look, I know, because we would forget from one week to the next, from one rehearsal to the next. How did we play? We've forgotten what it was that we came up with. So it was, well, look, let's just document this. Let's get it down. Whatever happens in the future, at least we'll have this and we'll know how we played and a record of it. So that was it one day. I think that was a Saturday afternoon. I think we came in and just laid everything down that we knew.
Yeah, it has that feel to it. It's like almost like a live recording, almost live in the studio.
Yeah,
it was kind of
like live in the studio. We all played at the same time, and it was as much, you know, for our own benefit as anyone else's. But it seemed valid enough to put it out as a release. I mean, that's a digital only release, and it's up on Bandcamp. I didn't, you know, draw much attention to it. But it's there if anyone's interested.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's kind of why we're doing this, right? Well, let's draw some attention to some of this stuff, hopefully.
When one Mellotron just isn't enough, call in the professionals. Progzilla. Proving that prog isn't just for dinosaurs.
Here I'd like to pause and play another song from Ben's Live in the Studio album called Dissected. That one was released in 2014. And the name of this song is Great Divide.
Thank you.
Just to reiterate, that was Great Divide by Ben Craven, the subject of our show, from his 2014 album Dissected. Now back for some more of that chat. So yeah, on your last your latest album, Last Chance to Hear, you returned to like more complex arrangements. And you even had William Shatner as a guest. You want to tell us something about your latest album and where you're going from here and working with Bill?
Yes. I don't know. I still don't know if I'm allowed to call him Bill.
Okay. Well, I did it.
But, yeah.
And I'm the Prog Squatch. He can come find me if he can, you know.
don't listen to me, Mr. Shatner. It's all right.
Mr. Shatner. Okay. From now on, we will refer to him as Mr. Shatner.
Oh, Bill, that's wonderful. So yeah, this latest album. Yes, I went back again. These pieces of music are again from the same. Well, I don't know, two thirds of them are from the same period as the Potions album. So these are actually, I wouldn't call them the leftovers. These were the bits of music that were too hard for that one. The track that Shatner's on is one of those tracks, and yeah, there were a couple of things that were slightly newer, but it was absolutely, in my mind, the same style as the Potions album. It's, you know, it's sort of progressive rock. I'd call it cinematic rock,
yeah,
because I'm still sort of uncomfortable calling my stuff prog rock because I'm not that good enough a player. To call it prog rock.
No, I think you're a pretty good player.
I play enough to be able to pull it off, but you know, to play anything fast and complicated like you know, the Steve Howes of the world or the Trevor Rabins of the world, or in the, I couldn't really pull that off. I'd be faking my way through it. But anyway, it's, you know, I've got cinematic rock is what I sort of call it, so I'm not quite in the firing line. But so anyway, I had this track, and actually a lot of it stayed instrumental this time. Only a few of those songs on the new one have vocals on them.
Right, I noticed.
And that was just trying to go with the feel of the music, and at some point I felt, well, this is enough. This is, you know, I've managed to realize this music as I originally wanted to realize it. And you know what? I don't think these pieces need vocals. I mean, I see what other people think of that. But anyway, this song, Spy in the Sky, it's in three parts. It could have almost been an album side to itself, but these pieces of music I had, and this part two, this big middle section, I decided to put vocals in it, and I sang it originally, and I was reasonably happy with it, but the music itself had this. Well, I think my own vocals seemed like a bit of a letdown. The music built it up so much, and it was kind of this epic sci-fi sort of feel about it, vaguely kind of Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds sort of thing.
Okay.
And when I got to the point where the lyrics came in, I always had this deep speaking voice in mind, and I'd kind of break out of that and have a bit of a laugh to myself because there's no one else to laugh at it, and then get back on to singing it. But you know, at some point, and this is where ideas become dangerous. At some point, I had, you know, geez, man, imagine if I, who could talk this? Man, Shatner, that'd be so great, and that'd be so funny, that'd be so brilliant. Ah, yeah. And so that idea stuck around accidentally. And and then at some point, you know, I don't know how, I must have got the courage up to actually investigate it. And then I made the mistake of going to speak to someone who was very friendly and very open to making it happen, and that was Billy Sherwood,
okay.
Who, you know, he's got a pretty strong Facebook presence.
Yeah.
And I think this was before he'd been brought back into Yes to play bass.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Billy had produced and written most of the previous Shatner album called Pond of the Mystery. So he had a working relationship, with Bill. And then I thought, well, you know, I thought Billy Sherwood is the only guy I can possibly think of who could conduct a remote recording session, who's worked with this gentleman before and recorded him before and could even do it. And so I actually approached Billy first to say, you know, do you think this would be possible? And it turned out it would be possible. So when, you know, as the universe somehow led me to William Shatner vocal, and when the universe does that,
yeah,
and you go along with it.
The planets were in alignment. Yeah.
So it was. I say that's the danger of ideas. And I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't there for the session. I, you know, I did not quite have the unlimited funds to fly over to LA and barge in on a session. But I mean, Billy Sherwood took his mobile studio over to the Shatner residence. It was a Friday afternoon, a Friday evening. They recorded it, and it was about 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning when I got the email with the completed track, the completed vocal track. And, you know, I couldn't sleep, and I was waiting for it. And I saw it on the whatever on the phone, and I ran downstairs to download it. And I heard it. Of course, I heard the isolated vocal track, no music or anything. And it was so gloriously over the top. it was even more extreme than I had imagined it would be. But when I put the music in, now I see exactly where he's coming from. And I was just over the moon. It was so
sure.
It was. I mean, no, funny is not the right word, because it's not meant ironically, the track, but at the same time having William Shatner perform on a non-ironic track is ironic. So, you know, there's too many levels for my little brain to try to figure out, but I absolutely love it, because he's right in that mysterious place where a lot of the time you're not sure if he's, you know, taking it seriously or overacting or what.
Yeah, that's kind of he's turned that into kind of like a cottage industry, actually, where it's almost like he's, I don't know, it's hard to say, almost like it's hard to figure out that is he being a parody of himself? You know what I mean? It's like,
and that's why it's so interesting.
And the
music itself for that, it's kind of melodramatic, it's kind of over the top. But it's, you know, it's a dead serious lyrical idea. So anyway, well, it had all those little connections in it, which I loved. And, it was just so wonderful to mix that and to hear it now.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, if you ever need any really deep American voices, you know.
Well, I know that now.
You know a guy.
Yeah. I'm sure you don't look a thing like the picture that's shown up here on Skype, but I don't know, maybe you do.
No, I got my hair cut, you know, my annual haircut.
Right.
for the summer, it's summer over here. You're going into winter, right? And here I'd like to play that William Shatner track from Ben's latest album entitled Last Chance to Hear, just released earlier this year. The name of this song is Spy in the Sky, Part 3.
high in the sky. The gale blows me to my knees. The dog at my throat and the dog at my feet never can be appeased. A train on the wrong track is running downhill. A pillar between the lines. The ship beats the wave. The wave beats the ship every time.
Once again, that was Spy in the Sky Part 3 with an interesting kind of over-the-top vocal by William Shatner, featured on Ben Craven's latest album, Last Chance to Hear, which was just released. Now I'll conclude my interview with Ben. But what else would you like to talk about as far as, do you have any live dates coming up or any other plans, another album on the horizon or anything?
I think, I haven't got any live dates at the moment. I am working on a one person show to be able to play these songs. I did do an album launch where I played, just as one person. I had some recorded backing going on. That was it sort of feels like cheating to me though. I would much rather have a band, but bands are expensive and very time consuming to be able to get them at a level to play music like this, where if you go to that level of rehearsal, then you want this to be a thing that's going to last for months as a tour or something like that.
I saw Steve Howe once, probably about 10 or 15 years ago. He was just doing a little tour by himself, and he had some stuff, in the can or whatever, pre-recorded. And you know what? It didn't bother me. He was there singing and playing his guitar live, but he had like little backing tracks to go with things. And it didn't bother me.
Well, I've also seen that on John Anderson's solo tours.
Okay, I've never seen John. Not by himself. I saw him with Jean-Luc Ponty when they came.
Ah, wow.
Yeah, it was cool. I enjoyed it.
I saw him. He actually toured here in Brisbane a few years ago. He did his solo tour. And, he had some recorded backing for those. But I think the trick, and maybe this was the same with Steve, I'm not sure, was you could tell that the backing was kind of synthesized. So there was nobody was actually trying to fool you into thinking that, there was a band there hiding behind the curtain.
Right.
So maybe that's a way that's a bit, a bit more honest to present it, where you're not actually trying to fool anyone that there are musicians playing these things.
Right. So, you're planning on doing that?
People, yeah. I'm trying to figure out a way to do it. In that, I think the best way for me to be able to promote this stuff is to be able to be mobile. I mean, most of the audience, I think, for this kind of music that I'm playing is overseas. It is in Europe. It is in the US. So to be in a position to be able to be a single person and to, hop on a plane and be able to play at a festival or something, I think would be ideal. It's a difficult kind of pipe dream, that one.
Well, what you're talking about would make it more doable. I know I've spoken to several bands who are doing this kind of long distance thing, like Fractal Mirror. A couple of the guys are in Holland, I think, and then the one guy's over here in the United States, the drummer. And it's all long distance, but then to even think of doing a festival becomes a big ordeal because, like you said, getting on planes and all that kind of stuff and flying over, and it's costing money, if you aren't a single guy, then you have family concerns also to be able to just drop everything and do that kind of stuff.
Sure. I mean, the other thing I think is that if you are with a good record label, you can get tour support money for that sort of thing. But I would imagine that is drying up very quickly these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the new album I did, I've found it on so many torrent sites.
Right.
And so many of those, the Russian download servers and everything.
Yeah. I hear this a lot. Yeah.
Everyone gets that, I imagine.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to decide what to do in that situation because, you think, people are listening to it, and perhaps if they listen to it and like it, they'll consider buying it or consider buying something else later down the track. Yeah, you just can't. You just don't know for sure.
Right.
And some of them I try to take down, but at least I hope they're listening to it in good quality. But you compare that you compare that with streaming, with putting these, putting your music up on Spotify, for instance, you would be putting your stuff up on Spotify for basically no financial return.
Right. Yeah, I've seen it's like hundreds of pennies, per stream or something. It's insane. Look it up,
yeah, 0.0011 cent per cent per play. I think it was something like that. And people who subscribe to Spotify pay good money for that, and right. legitimately then would feel no reason to purchase the album, for instance. So you've got that going on where you're pretty much guaranteed no sales.
And from what I hear, I don't know. I saw a thing that was saying that. I think Apple's going to discontinue downloads, as far as formal album downloads. Even they're dying. If you look at the curves for the sales, how things have gone, downloads took over from actual physical CDs. Now they're on the wane, and streaming's the thing, and artists aren't making anything on streaming. I always say on my show, I try to anyway, please support the artists. If you like this music, you have to try to make sure that it doesn't go away, people are doing this, and in some cases they're doing it because they're passionate about it and they're going to do it one way or the other. But, let's help them to make somewhat of a living, or at least, not lose money, for making this wonderful music and turning it out into the world. It's a shame if anyone has to lose money to do that when people are out there enjoying the music,
Listening to the station with the best mix of music. Progzilla, bringing you the best progressive music has to offer.
I, and probably a lot of the, a lot of the guys out there, I mean, I've given up on the prospect of being able to make a living from it.
Right, yeah, unfortunately.
Like I said, I am just trying to, I'm just trying to break even, make this, this process pay for itself. And perhaps get it heard at the same time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Ben was easy and fun to talk to, and he and I, we rattled on for quite a while. I edited it down to the most relevant stuff for you guys. So remember, if you enjoyed any of Ben's stuff, you can find more about him at his website, bencraven.com. That's BENCRAVEN, all one word, .com. And he's also got a Bandcamp site where you can buy merchandise if you would like to. Maybe go and show him a little love.
Welcome back to the magical musical world of EpiFest. EpiFest 5 takes place on Saturday, July 16th, 2016, at the Lansdowne Hall in Stroud. And we continue to highlight excellent and eclectic live music. It stirs the emotions, gets your pulse racing, and titillates the intellect. We go all over the musical map, from prog rock to psychedelia, from jazz to folk, from ambient to sea shanties, and pretty much everything else in between. Featuring Marvin B. Naylor.
It's a sunny day, why not come and play?
Tom Slatter.
We're men of the world, but is this the world that we want men of all? How it's changed.
Dark Room, featuring Elif Yalvak. Circus Bialis International Quartet. Judy Dybul and her band of Perfect Strangers.
In the cold grey light of a winter's dawn, when the ice grows on the...
And our headliners, William D. Drake and his band.
Our worthy forefathers, let's give them a cheer.
To Tickets are just £25 on the door, £22 in advance, plus there are a range of special advance ticket packages available. To buy tickets, or just to find out more information about the festival, go to allthews.epifest.co.uk. And remember, EpiFest reaches the parts that other musical events cannot reach, so don't miss out.
To wrap things up, I've got a track from a new band called Ghost Medicine. The band is from Atlanta, Georgia, and includes Jared Leach on guitars and vocals, Scott Prian on drums and programming, and Sarah Hofer on vocals. They had Colin Edwin of Porcupine Tree fame do the bass work. From their brand new album entitled Discontinuance, this is the title track. Thank you. Once again, that was Discontinuance by the band Ghost Medicine from their brand new release of the same name, Discontinuance. You can order that album at their Bandcamp site. Make sure to get the right band, because there's more than one called Ghost Medicine. This is the one from Georgia in the album again, Discontinuance. So that'll just about do it for this week. And once again, I will implore you all to be good to each other and remember to prog on, brothers and sisters.